Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, send a link.
Everybody's doing well on the lockdown and the quarantine from the Rona. This is Down South and Dirty, and this morning, guess who's back in the house with us from the campaign trail? Kadada Gray's back home, y'all. What's going on, Kadada?
Good morning, everyone. I am so glad to be back. Yeah, it's been kind of busy. It's been kind of busy, but you know, we're all somewhat slowing down. So it's a pleasure to be back home and welcome back home.
Okay, folks, well, this show, you know, everything is changing because of the coronavirus outbreak, and we are being told that we need to social distance. We're being told to shelter in place, to stay at home, and that has changed how we are interacting in so many different ways. Like last night, for instance, you had DJ D Nice do like 8 hours of DJing just so people could party at home. Now, I didn't watch D Nice's stream, but there was a local guy by the name of DJ Genius ATL who did a very similar thing that was here out of Atlanta. That he did something that a friend of mine shared, you know, invited me to, and he was popping last night. And we talking about this was strict, you know, like Southern music, you know, ATL, New Orleans Bounce, Chop and Screw from Memphis. You know, we had some Miami bass. We had, you know, all that stuff that we like from down south. You know, we was getting it last night. So we even see that even in entertainment spaces and club spaces, you know, people are saying, hey, we might be in the house together, but because of modern technology, we can do all kinds of wonderful things to keep ourselves entertained and happy from our home. Well, this is also a way we need to be thinking about how we're going to continue to engage in our democracy. Because these type of things historically lead nations down the path of authoritarianism, because governments have to start cracking down, you know, to keep people safe, and the government does a little over, you know, a little overreach here, a little underreach there, overreaction, underreaction. We all know how government operates. But this is a perfect opportunity because of the time we live in, the technology that we have, and say, hey, we're still going to hold the traditions of our democracy intact, and we're going to use these technological innovations. We're going to use the fact that we as Americans have always been those who find innovation during times of distress. And let's show some new ways of doing this, you know, and how we need certain things need to continue, how certain things need to discontinue, you know, just for now, and how this even may affect us during elections from here on out. Kadada, you've been out there, you know, because you've been away from the show, you've been out there. So can you tell us one of the immediate impact that you saw from, you know, being out there actively in the field?
Well, the immediate impact, and let me just say that just to kind of give a timeline of, I'm not going to say the demise of traditional campaigning, so we're just going to call it the restart of campaigning. Very differently was when, you know, when I was in legislative session, the legislature decided to suspend indefinitely, I think it was Thursday, the 12th, March 12th, I think that was the day. And at that moment, things kind of got real serious real quick, because I think down the ballot, Republican, Democrat side, I think there's over about 60% of our incumbents in races that all have challengers. And the question on the table was really, what do we do now? And as we have progressed over the last 10 days, 10 to, I don't think it's been a full 2 weeks or so, we have really seen the biggest demise of canvassing, right? I've never seen anything like this. With the demise of canvassing right now and actually going to knock on someone's door, that has put people in a serious panic on a campaign-wise. Why? Because canvassing is the best way, in my opinion, as I do a lot of field work, to get and meet voters, right? And so, and there's just some traditionalists out here, incumbents and new candidates, that just feel like, what am I going to do if I cannot knock on someone's door? Someone opens the door, says hello, and I start my little 30-second speech at the door telling you why it is that I'm running for office and why, you know, you should vote for me. So that has been the biggest thing on campaigns right now, that ability to have person-to-person contact. And it's interesting because, you know, at certain times, canvassing becomes such a hardship for clients because it could be 5 hours long. Some people can only canvass 2 hours long. I mean, and all of a sudden now it is a need. It is a must-have. But, you know, traditionally human population, the moment you take something away, we want it more. So canvassing is the biggest challenge for a lot of campaigns at the moment, because what is your go-to if you can't knock on a door? And that's one of the biggest questions. So it's just right. Been an interesting ride so far.
So for me, you know, I deal with a lot of stuff from a strategic nature. So I'm talking directly to candidates and this, that, and other. And you know, candidates are usually always little balls of anxiety. You know, they worry about stuff that they ought not be worried about because the team usually has well under control and this, that, and the other. And they are trying to be involved in the other stuff other than doing what they need to be doing, which is, you know, making phone calls and talking to people that they need to be talking to, that need that personal touch. You know, now they don't have anything to do and they really want to be involved. So what would you know, from your standpoint, and then I'll chime in for what I would want to do. How do we keep, you know, how do we deal with candidate anxiety?
Wait, you said candidate and what? I didn't hear the last
anxiety
part.
The candidate anxiety.
Oh.
Because, you know, they always are anxious.
Always.
They always are anxious. It's more so now. And, you know, that can be a stress for the, not just the candidate, but the staff also.
Oh, yeah. And it is because we have a couple things going on. You know, well, let me first say this. If y'all don't know, I'm a life coach in my other job. And so the life coach in me is watching this because what's happened is when you're anxious like that, and a lot of candidates are anxious, and the reason they're anxious is because of control, right? You have a loss of control. Because when you write a campaign plan, there's a journey and a timeline that you're on, and you kind of know what you're going to do weekly. And then all of a sudden, everything that has been put on a calendar has been erased and gone. So meet and greet, canvassing, and I'll talk about call time at a different time, but a lot of things that they're used to doing, it's it's now a race, right? And so, and let me just point out, there's two different paths right now, because if you're an incumbent, you have one path, and if you are a new politician or wannabe politician, there's a different path. And let me start by talking about the clients of mine in terms of just anybody that's wanting to run for office for the first time, right? There's a different type of anxiety because they need to be able to put themselves out there. And the probability of name recognition being increased right now for a lot of candidates can be low because they can't canvass. They don't have the amount of money they need to be digital, media, on the radio, or, you know, or do traditional mailers, because mail pieces, the price of mail pieces have increased, right? And so this is a different type of anxiety. And so people are questioning, like, should I even still be in this race? But guess what? You already paid your qualifying fee, so you might as well stay in it. But, you know, you have people who are first-time candidates that are burdened with things like, hey, I might lose my company because I'm a small business owner. And then you layer that on with, okay, I decided to run. What can I actually offer to people? Because I'm a first-time candidate, and they're starting to feel like just like the regular population, right? So the other path right. that we're on are in terms of incumbents, right? Well, incumbents right now actually have a different platform than someone running for the first time because they have access to all the information around this COVID-19 crisis. And so they have the ability to do more constituent outreach, right, and provide a service to their population. And they should be doing that because it's a good time to make sure that their name recognition gets high at the moment. But they're also anxious because they know there's a traditional path to a win. You know, you're doing your call time. You're definitely doing your canvassing. And so all of those traditional things have been pulled aside. And everybody, whether it's from local government to federal level, everybody has to shift. And so I can only speak with people that I work with that it's a lot of, and this is a life coach in me going, okay, we need to take a deep breath. Because we've only been sequestered, I'm saying sequestered, for 5 days, let's take a deep breath. And so maybe what the time is right now to look at is, are the campaign plans right? How do we adjust it? What is it that you don't know? Because people don't realize when you start canvassing, you lose a lot of time in terms of day-to-day management of your campaign because the focus goes to knocking on doors, knocking on doors, knocking on doors, but you might be signing checks that you don't even recall what you ordered, why you're signing checks. And so this is a time right now to do what you can control in the campaign, which is do right. a high-level review, right? Get high-level, then go detailed in terms of budget. What have I spent my money on? You know, what are my needs right now? Who are my constituents? And like I said, if you're an incumbent, you have the ability to share information that you're learning, whether it be from the governor or city or, you know, county level individuals with your constituents because you already have a level of trust to be built. If you're a first-time candidate, you have to build name recognition, and so it would help if you partnered with somebody to kind of get your name out there. You might be topic-driven right now because right now social media traffic is high, extremely high. Because everyone's looking at social media, right? So be very topic-driven around, oh, you know, let's talk about education. Let's talk about, you know, what it looks like to homeschool. Or let's talk about, you know, what happens if school ends and they don't come back to school this year, right? So you have to be topic-driven. You have to be very targeted. But just from a human perspective, this is a good time to learn a little bit of technology so that way you can do some Zoom conferences with family members, with your staff. Go outside to take a walk if necessary, clean something, you know. So just from a human perspective, I think we're all kind of feeling this kind of isolation, especially if you don't have any, if you're a single individual and you don't have anybody else in your home with you. Or you may need to learn how to actually get to know other people in your family because a lot of us spend a lot of time out in the world, and we are realizing now, or if you haven't realized this, you only spend about a good 2 hours a day, 2-3 hours a day with your mate and your children. And so this is, you know, look for the blessings in all of it, but on the campaign trail, anxiety is definitely high, but you have to be innovative, and I guess that's the goal that you and I are trying to meet today and sharing with everyone, is that innovation is key right now, and understanding that tradition sometimes has to move and change, so new traditions can come about, and I think that the goal of staff, or should be the goal of staff, is to enter into that realm of innovative technology and innovative campaigning.
Right, because I know, I'm watching social media pretty regularly, and right now, and I want to talk about some presidential level type stuff, you got, on one hand, you have, as you said, you have Senator Sanders and President Trump, who are actively elected officials right now. You know, you got Trump sitting in front of the camera every day telling us, you know, now granted, before the coronavirus hit, there had not been a White House briefing for almost damn 250-some-odd days. It may even be longer than that. Now we're getting a briefing from the press room every day. Okay, now granted, every time the president opens his mouth, the stock market drops. But for his base, he's being seen, he's out there. You know, regardless, and you know, they don't have any problem with the stuff he says, so it's great. Senator Sanders, who is currently a U.S. senator, is taking part in the debates in the U.S. Senate about the different relief packages that are being put forth. And not only is he participating, but he's also continuing to push his platform through that by making sure that every time something happens, he's talking about the things he's always talked about and how the things we need to do now wouldn't even need to happen if the policies that he believed in were already in place. But then we have, you know, former Vice President Joe Biden, who is not actively, you know, serving as an elected official right now. Campaign is making a pivot.
Right.
Now, the great thing about Bernie's campaign that is very youth-driven, they're always innovators over there because this is the revolution. Now, everybody knows that during this period, unless, you know, so that we got there, that I've, you know, chosen to support Joe Biden. In 2016, I supported Bernie Sanders. I have great respect for both individuals, whoever the nominee, that's who I'm voting for president.
Right.
But I do recognize the strengths and weaknesses. Now, Biden, under traditional means, was a stronger candidate. If the coronavirus had taken place, where we are now had been maybe 4 weeks earlier, Sanders could have possibly ran the board on Super Tuesday.
Right.
Okay. Just because the way everything is shaping up, and that's very good if you're watching politics to watch how both those campaigns are operating. Now, I'm not saying that candidates need to try to operate like a presidential campaign, but it's showing with the ability to have incumbency, a young, innovative staff, people who are able to push things out in new mediums, that's key. Biden, and I know this because since I declared my support, I started sending some money. So now I'm getting all the little emails and everything from the campaign. The campaign is starting to shift to a digital format. But this was not their wheelhouse. Joe is a very retail candidate. He's retail politics. He likes going out there shaking, you know, pressing the flesh, kissing babies, shaking hands. That's his thing. And a lot of our candidates down ballot are the same type of people. You're extroverted.
Yep.
You like to touch people. You want to be in their face. And right now you are outside of your comfort zone because you can't do that. It is actually endangering people's lives to be at their door for any amount of time, or at least let's put it like this. People perceive that you're endangering their lives from being at their door. Because some people are taking this a hell of a lot more seriously than others. And if you've been out and about, you know, and I've, you know, been taking my only trips outside of my, you know, my home have been to work and to the store. And a week and a half ago, people were still walking around. You know, it was all right. I went to the store yesterday. Nearby, everybody and their mama, won't, if they got a mask, they wearing a mask, they wearing gloves. People are walking around with baby wipes in their pocket, with disinfectant wipes in their pocket, wiping down everybody. I seen this lady, she was going through, she was wiping off the cans on the shelf. And she was check, she pick up a can, she wipe it down. She look at it, mm-hmm. If that wasn't what she wanted, she put it back. So y'all need to thank that lady, because she's probably cleaning every damn thing in the damn stuff. But this is the same, but you got people who are feeling this type of way. So we are thinking you, as you're campaigning, if you're a retail politician, you know, do you really want to be at the door for anything? You know, there's talks about whether or not dropping lit is still legitimate. And before you come in now, and before you chime in, let me say one thing. I work in the paper industry. Okay, I work in the paper industry. And I've heard some data about how, because we, you know, there's a couple of Facebook groups that are out there, particularly for those who are operatives, that are talking about how the campaign during this situation. And there's a couple of graphs that have been put out. Maybe if I get my hands on one, I'll share it on the Facebook page and on my personal page. But what we call substrates, different surfaces, allow the virus to live longer than others. Mm-hmm. I've had some people in the medical person in the medical field tell me that the virus can live up to 3 hours just airborne. On paper, I've heard everything from 24 hours to 3 days. I know on plastic and steel, people have talked about from 3 days to 5 days. So it's just like I seen somebody was placing signs, and they told, well, whoever they placed the side yard sign in their yard, talking about, do not go out there and touch it.
You know what? I can't.
They put out there putting signs in people's yards. Which I don't necessarily have a problem with, as long as people are not going out there repositioning the signs.
I mean, you know, in the signs right now when people aren't driving. That is not important.
Well, it's according to where you are. It's according to where you are, because I'm going to tell you right now, even though out here in Rockdale County, there's a major decrease in traffic, because you can actually speed on 138 right now.
Yeah.
Which usually that is impossible at any point in the day, unless it's real early in the morning or late in the evening. You can speed, but there's still numbers of people out there. But again, we're talking about signs, and it's according to where you are. Now, I'm gonna tell you, in the hood, people are still out. Folks in the hood are still out there. They don't care.
Mm-hmm.
COVID-19. Yes.
Oh, look, I know people that's been going to a club off of Old National. Clubbing
now,
is real right now.
I mean, seriously. Now, we ain't being funny. We just telling it like it is. There are people in certain, you know, areas that this really hadn't hit them. So
Yep. In
some of these places, just because we know the culture, it may some people like, you know what, they still out there. We're going to put our signs up. And
Yep. This
is the thing. This is the thing. Is it right or is it wrong? Kind of, for me, is a relative situation. Because everybody
Yeah. Knows
that I have a saying that politics is warfare with our bloodshed. With that being how I normally run things, if I have a target-rich environment, I'm going to take advantage of the target-rich environment.
Mm-hmm.
So if I know that I'm in a neighborhood, that I'm in an area where people are still out and about, I'm going to take precautions to make sure that I'm not the one transmitting, and that I'm
right.
not going, and that I'm protecting myself from being contaminated. But I still probably will play signs, because to be honest with you, I shouldn't come into contact with anybody placing a sign. If I've called and somebody's come to my website and requested a sign, I can go place that sign without me coming to contact them, because I can send them an email back or call them back and say, hey, you can see, look out the damn window and see the signs out there. If you're placing road signs in places, you know, strategic places, you shouldn't be coming in contact with nobody. However,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've heard from people that this whole lit drop situation, and now I want you to talk about that, because me and you had a conversation before the show about that, and I think me and you are kind of on the same page with that, but go ahead and talk about it.
So if you're out in the world and you don't know what lit drop means, that, I hate to say the word literally, but literally it means you are going to the door, you're putting a piece of lit on the door, and you're walking away. You're not knocking, you're not waiting for a response or anything like that. And so usually we end up doing lit drops somewhere in, you know, a week before the election or so, early voting kind of thing, especially when you've hit your numbers already and you just kind of need something to do, so you just kind of lit drop, as they say. And so that has come up plenty of times. I do know a couple campaigns, not mine, that have done lit drops, and they have been fervently cussed out for it. Because people are like, because it's you have to think about it from a constituent perspective, your fellow neighbor's perspective, that someone literally came to their door and could have potentially left this virus even on a piece of lit that close to them, right? Because you still have to open the door to get the lit. You still have to touch the door to get the lit. And so I would not advise it just because of the perception of it, especially if you are an incumbent, because people will know that you are getting real-time information, so you should at least have the seriousness to understand what is going on and the impact to other people. So I would never, lit dropping is not an option right now. So respect people's spaces and their homes. Now, I will say this, that in this mayhem of this pandemic, logic is not really working for us at the highest levels, mm-hmm. because people will be upset about a lit drop because that's political, right? We see that as a political action. However, if I go open my door and I see Amazon there, I'm good. If
right.
I've ordered
I requested you to come to my door.
Right, right.
See, that's
and
the
so,
difference. You ask Amazon to come to your door. You ask Grubhub to come to your door. You ask DoorDash. You ask Uber Eats.
Mm-hmm.
You invited them to your door. So you mm-hmm. knew that, okay, I'm taking this risk for this thing to come to the door. This, you know, uninvited interactions may be seen completely different. And as you said, it's political. You know how folks feel about the government, politics in itself. You know, it just ain't what they're trying to do.
I mean, and like I said, there's something, you know, you and I've had a conversation about the logic and illogic behavior of human beings, and this is where we're at mm-hmm. right now, because we're picking and choosing what feels good to us and what doesn't feel good to us, because I promise you, I still go get my mail from the mailman.
Right.
And maybe I shouldn't. Right, because I'm hoping that they've touched, they're wearing gloves, but whatever's being picked up on the gloves is still being transitioned and deposited onto my mail, right, which I'm bringing home.
Right.
Which is supposed to be,
you know,
and I can't
what is
sanitize
the protocol?
Mail.
Because you could, but all that is that cost taking place. You can, you know, there's a possibility. You can, you know, just like I spray Lysol and things, there's disinfectants that can be sprayed. There's things that can be introduced to the environment that could kill things, you know, that can kill the virus, you know. So if I can spray Lysol on my countertop or just in my, you know, in general, in the space that I'm in, then you can do that. There's ways of sanitizing things. But the question is to keep the supply chain moving in an efficient manner, is that taking place? You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
and a lot of people ask
that
question, what is UPS? Because, you know, that was an article that just came out about FedEx and UPS workers, how they are having to go to work because things are still out there having to move, products still have to go, things still have to be delivered, and they're freaking terrified. I mean, I mean, you know, I was sitting there talking about that the other day on one of my Facebook page posts about how me as a blue-collar worker, there are those people who are working in distribution warehouses, people like me who are making packaging, people who are actually making the product, people who are delivering the product, people who are selling those products. We are just as important to the system as the nurses, the doctors, because the nurses and the doctors to get the masks, the surgical gowns, the tests, the medicine, need the truck driver, the forklift driver, the packaging, the guy who's making the packaging, and the sales rep, because that stuff has to move.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of anxiety out there about how that operates, and it's very interesting. Oh, we got a caller.
Oh, we do? Who's our caller?
Good morning, caller. How you doing?
Peace and black power. How y'all doing?
We're doing all right.
We're doing all right. Good morning.
That's good.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So what you got
good
to
morning.
Say? What you got to say?
Hello?
I was just tuning in. I didn't really I know a lot of the coronavirus talk is going around, so I don't know where you guys were currently in the conversation, you know.
We're talking about this particular episode is that we're talking about political campaigning during the coronavirus, during the lockdown, and how things have having to change. Because normally people come knock on your door, you know, you got candidates out shaking hands, kissing babies, and that thing is changing. And we're sitting there talking about the logic that some people are having about certain things being delivered to their homes and having certain interactions versus political interaction, and how people are looking at that. So that's what we were in the conversation we were talking about right now, what I was talking about, how different people in the supply chain, you know, your factory workers, your warehouse distribution people, how they're having to go to work and handle things to get to your house. But you may, as an individual, weigh about somebody coming to your house to campaign. So let me ask you that question. If somebody came to your door, they did not, they didn't do nothing, but they left a flyer on your door or a door hanger on your door about their campaign, how would you feel about that?
Started, you know, me as being a black man here in America who has been the one to look at the political system, period, to where we are today. It's been the one that we've had a lot of hope in. But from where I stand, our political story is going to have to be a lot deeper than just being a Democrat or a Republican. So I'm not just easily sold. I'm not going to be easily sold by the person that is promoting something on my doorstep. So a lot of times I might just let it fall. I probably wouldn't even give a darn about it one way or another. Because I think to me, the level of politics.
So you're saying it's the conversation between the regular folks and y'all, you were not really even worried about how the candidates are coming towards you because of their their political agendas. It's the conversations that we're having while we're sitting on this lockdown about what is really going on in our communities and which person best represents those those values. That's what you're, am I hearing that correctly?
Right. That, and that's absolutely right. And it doesn't stop just with political candidates. You understand, or
right.
You know anybody that's running for president. It starts with the stores that you're supporting, because nobody should be getting your vote who doesn't represent you and doesn't stand beside policies that are going to help you move forward. Therefore, nobody should be getting my doggone money that doesn't care about me. I shouldn't be going to any store that doesn't, you know, you understand that we're talking about how we as black people are, and we talk about how the dollar circulates in our black community. This is why, because we don't understand politics. This is the political power that we have to have before we get to any table and sit down with any other group of people. We have to be powerful ourselves. I will say this, because they weren't 100% right, but at the same time, I haven't seen any type. When you look at the WIC program, how the WIC now does for children and women, they got that program from the Black Panthers when they started the breakfast, helping out single mothers and women and children. So that was something that America got from, you know, the Black Panther Party. So I think it's going to be, again, these types of grassroots programs that are actually going to get us what we need to get. And like you said, not all this fluff. Not all this person that has the millions of dollars and, oh, nah, our stuff, the stuff that is going to be good for us, is going to have to start, you know, at the neighborhood level, at the
you know, caller,
level, and then
caller, it's very interesting.
Yes, ma'am.
that you offered up the WIC program, right? Because what people really need right now is continued access to resources. And so to your point that, you know, WIC provides for women and children, you know, during a crisis like this, we need to ensure that people have access to those resources. And we know that those resources are still available, right? Because this is going to impact so many people in ways that we haven't even reached yet. And so especially, you know, pregnant women and children, because they're definitely at high risk. But we want to make sure that as far as candidates are concerned, incumbents and first-time candidates alike, I would say shore up on understanding, you know, what resources are actually available. You know, I had a great constituent call the other day from an older lady who was concerned about her food stamp card because her food stamp card, you know, the PIN stopped working. And so I had to hunt down access to the food stamp people and figure out, are they still open? And, you know, and so that's the way to be of service to our community at this time, and knowing where to point people towards. Or if you are a healthy person, saying, I can actually bring something to you just in case you need it and you can't access it. So, and yes, big shout out to the Black Panther Party for actually starting the WIC program. Most people don't know that from a historical basis because it was taken out of the hands of the Black Panther Party and put into governmental control to make sure that certain groups don't get actual credit for it, but that's where it landed. But to serve your purpose and your point, we definitely need to be in contact with our fellow neighbors and citizens and asking for the needs. What do they need at the moment? Do they have everything? Because guess what? You know, we have not thought about people who, you know, have disability checks, right? That may have been delayed in going to purchase all of these cleaners and Clorox wipes and all those kind of things. And when you're out here panic shopping, you know, all those things are gone. So we still have a level of people that still haven't been able to go out and shop and get their needs. So in Black Panther spirit, I'd say we need to learn how to be a little bit more collective and community oriented during this time. And thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Oh,
yeah, we appreciate that.
The response is, I just want to say something to what she said and the question that you asked me, brother, at the beginning. And that's the thing that I would be grateful at seeing at my door. branded or any type of political publicity or marketing ploy, I would rather see the brothers and sisters that are coming to you know, lend their hand as a friendly neighbor or to ask, hey, can you come over here and assist us while we go pick this house so I can make some. This is where we have to go. We're not going nowhere politically. If we're not here, all that stuff is a bunch of fluff. So this is a great show, great topic, and hopefully you guys, you know, definitely get in there.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So this is one of those, you know, we sit back and we, you know, again, this is somebody, again, this is a real person, you know, that's living out there doing this, you know, COVID-19 outbreak. And they're saying, you know, look, I'd rather somebody come to my door helping me than to come, you know, promoting themselves to me.
Yep.
I mean, that's where we are. I mean, I personally think that a lot more candidates need to be moving to getting their message to where people at right now. Most people are sitting in front of their television, in front of their community, their computers. They're sitting with their phone in their hand because those phones have not left their hand.
Yep.
That's people that I have not seen on social media for God knows how long. All of a sudden, I'm seeing you in my timeline again. You're posted. You're talking about what's going on. People are wanting to reach out and have conversations that way. So, you know, if you can do anything that can get people involved, that's probably a good thing to do, you know. And, you know, speaking on, there's a gentleman saying, you know, people promoting themselves and this, that, and the other. A question came up from a candidate who's running for a county commission seat in one of the metro counties. Actually made a Facebook post about should they be still raising money?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, you know, this is my reasoning behind it. And I'm not saying ask every Tom, Dick, and Harry for money right now. But the political class, the donor class, knows their job. And I hate to say it like that because, you know, all of my people who talk about the corruption of politics, this, that, and other, when I say donor class, they go, see, you recognize that there's a certain group of people that have purse strings. That's in every.
But it's true. Yep.
But that's in everything. There's a group of people who control the purse strings. Even with the Democratic Socialists, there's somebody who's controlling y'all purse strings. Y'all have a benefactor somewhere. Or a group of benefactors somewhere that you can call on who is sympathetic to your call, who can drop you some dollars.
Yep.
Understand this.
And
every
here's the thing. Let's also.
That supports their call.
And let me just also point out, candidates versus incumbents, only first-time candidates or any candidate that's running for office right now that's not an incumbent, this is your time to do call time because guess what? Legislators, if you're a state senator, state rep, they cannot, if those are your races, they cannot by law fundraise at this time. Even though session is suspended indefinitely, they cannot fundraise still. So if you have a challenger, you still need to ask for money. But the ask is not only are you targeting to your specific donor class, but also it's an opportunity to outreach and still get an understanding of the needs of your fellow citizens. And so your ask is going to be very different than, you know, a traditional ask, which is, hey, I'm running for office. Hey, can you give me money? We just need to flip the seat. That's not the conversation right now because people are astutely aware about what's going on politically from the top. And now you need to be able to speak to how you as a candidate are going to be able to benefit your county, your city, your state, your federal level constituents And that's how you're going to get your money, because people are going to see the need of what's occurring and what's to come. Incumbents that are, like I said, under the dome cannot do that at the moment. Their hands are tied.
Right.
So you definitely, as a strategy, take the opportunity to get your money.
And see, this is also this
money,
is the thing that I'm, and this is one of the things that I'm, that I want to put upon all political candidates right now, regardless if you are an incumbent or a challenger. Particularly, this message is particularly for my Democrat, my fellow Democrats. If we look across the country right now, and I'm being overtly partisan, if you look across the country right now and you look at the cities and the states, except for one, which is Texas, all of the states which have made major moves to put their populations in better positions by going ahead and saying, you know what, I cannot trust y'all to do the right thing. We tried to do social distancing. We tried to do, you know, allow you certain, you know, respect your civil liberties. But we got folks who just can't act right. So for the benefit of everyone, we got to lock it down. Now, I can hear the Republicans saying, oh, but see, this is why we can't trust you Democrats. But this is why you can trust us Democrats. We know that freedom isn't free.
Exactly.
You Republicans say this sometimes, but they don't act like it. They don't. They say these words, the wonderful words, and they talk about the greatness of the republic. They do all of this, but they really, what they talk about is supporting the class of the people that they want to do. Now, what we understand as Democrats is that there's no, you know, only time you hear that's freedom and death is in the church. But in real life, in our reality, dead people ain't free. They dead. Sick people ain't free. They sick.
Right.
That can only be free. Freedom can only exist when you have an environment around you that allows you to be free and to live your best possible life. That is not this moment. We can't live our best possible lives. Our lives are in jeopardy. And as Aristotle says in the Treatise on Politics, the purpose of the state is to do the most good. To do the most good. And to provide examples of virtue. And at this particular point in time, the virtuous thing to do, the thing that is good for the state, would be to lock it down. It is not to lock it down to limit your freedom. It's to lock it down so that you can live to fight and be free another day. Because right now, most people will not die from COVID-19, but they will get really fucking sick.
Yep.
And when they get sick, and if you listen to the people who have had it and survived, they talk about the excruciating pain that they were in, the people who had severe symptoms. Those people are going to need hospital care. And we only have X amount of hospital beds in this country.
Yep.
Now, true enough, we've mobilized our military and we've mobilized our public health our assets, which we're now figuring that public health has taken a major hit. Okay? And private industry and private health care, which I still believe has a place in this country, cannot completely support what needs to happen. So you got the National Guard that's going to be building field hospitals, and it takes a minute for the Army and the Navy to build a field hospital in the actual field doing combat. I don't remember, you know, y'all really pay attention, you know, those of us who are old enough and those of us who like watching vintage television. Ever watch MASH? That's a field hospital.
Lord, did you call it vintage? You called it vintage television. Jesus, Lord, I'm old. Damn.
But that's a field hospital.
Sorry, I
got to
sit with that for a minute.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
That's a field hospital. Now, it may be some more technology that goes along with that today, but basically, if our army is to try our army and our navy, because when I say army and navy, you notice I'm not saying Marine Corps and Air Force, because the Marine Corps doesn't have its own doctor. Their doctors are Navy doctors. And normally the Air
right.
Force has medical personnel, but your large medical personnel would be the United States, other than the Navy would be the United States Army. So if they're going out putting up quick hospitals, I promise you, they are putting up tents. And there's going to be tents with wood planks or some type of plank on the floor to keep you from just being in the dirt. And there's going to be generators, there's going to be lights, there's going to be surgical tables. It's not going to be like Emory Hospital. And there's going to be people in tents and beds and wards just like that. While they build more semi-permanent facilities, that's what that's going to look like. So what I'm getting to is that to make sure that in the future, because this is not the last time this is going to happen, because you can go back in history and look all the way back to the Plague of Antonia, which is the first major plague historically written down other than the plague in Exodus. But this is the first, then the Plague of Antonius, which was in the Roman, during the days of the Roman Empire, and I think it was 162 BC, or it was 162 AD, one of the two. It was the first time that they had written it down about a plague. And this plague hit the Roman Empire
right.
like a sledgehammer. And they talked about how they had to quarantine people.
Right.
They talked about how Roman government shut down. Matter of fact, it had to probably be AD because I'm a stoic, Marcus Aurelius was emperor during the late part of the plague. Marcus Aurelius was the emperor, during the later end of this plague.
Well,
so what you have is that they were quarantining people. There were government restrictions taking place then. So this will not be the last time this happens. Only thing that changes is that back then, every time something popped off, millions of people died.
Yep.
You know, we look through the Spanish flu of 1918.
Mm-hmm.
We had a couple of million people die. And this was the early 20th century. Now, we are sitting here, you know, panicking because 4,000 people on the planet have died. But this comes to the same aspect that we look at wars, and when you had, you know, a couple of million soldiers die, and you had tens of millions of civilians die during World War II, those numbers have significantly dropped in the 21st century, where we cry when we lose 5,000 soldiers over 11 years of conflict. So, and that we may have had a million civilians, and you know, we go, oh my God, that's because we're not used to the level of carnage that the boomers are used to, or the greatest generation. And we
right.
wonder why they act the way they act, because they've seen carnage. You know, two or three people die around a millennial, that's a crisis. But these people have seen millions of people just be pooped gone. But it still doesn't take away the scale of it, because it's still a large scale of human life, regardless of what is the relativity of it, is still
right.
the loss of human life. But what we got to get to
yep.
is that our leadership, the leadership is very important. And if we as Democrats do not do our job of going out here engaging these voters during this time period, and be respectful about it. We got to be respectful about it, but at the same time, we are in a fight. We're in a two-pronged fight. One, we have, as good Americans, we need to fight this battle for all of our countrymen. But as good Democrats, we also understand that the political doctrine of our opponents on the other side of the aisle put us in this position. because we see where Democrats are in control, they are doing things to stem the tide. They're doing the best they can to flatten the curve. They're not waiting for the private sector to say, come save us. Because, see, at the
what
end of the
doing,
day,
the
human
private sector may not be there.
Because this is the thing. Mm. Now, I'm not going to roll back on the fact that I'm not a socialist. But, I've told people, America has always been based on that we are a very flexible and dynamic mixed system when it comes to our economy. And there are points in time when the private sector has to be engaged to do the things that need to happen to make our country grow. And then there's times when the government needs to centrally plan and control the aspects of our economy to keep it from collapsing. Because if you depend on capitalism all by itself, economies will collapse in time periods like this. And if you depend on socialism, then you don't get the growth that is needed to provide the resources that you can allocate during these times. So you wouldn't be able to get neither one would be able to survive without the other. Because right now we need, you know, quote unquote socialist program, which I still don't say good governance is not socialism, because during the plague of Antonius, that was a monarchy. Okay, so, and they practice what we probably consider a market economy. You don't, your government does, it has to do what it has to do to provide the most good. It doesn't matter the as it says in Aristotle's Politics, it doesn't matter the type of constitution of government. It just matters, is that government under that constitution? When I say constitution, we're talking about how that government is formed. We're not talking about actual documents. We're talking about how it's formed. Is this formed, does it provide the most good for the people that it was constituted for? Because every group of people through their traditions constitute different types of government. And in our government, we are people that were founded through revolution, based on the fact of rigid individualism. Let's everybody get that understood from the point jump, that America is about individualism. This is why it is so politically slow. This is why it is very much against our grain for our governments to automatically jump into the position of locking us down, because that is not who we are as a culture. It may be what's best, but then you have to overcome certain cultural feelings. It's just like up until World War II, America never kept a standing army, a large standing army. We would go to war, we would draft a bunch of men, we would get a million men up to go fight, and when it was over with, we'd draw that joker down to about 50,000. After World War II, because we've seen that the world constantly kept providing a threat to us, and that we always had to completely disrupt our universe. Every time this happened, we decided that we were going to start keeping a large standing army. And now we can go to war without the citizens of this country even realizing we're at war. We've been at war in Afghanistan for almost 12 years, and it has not affected the daily lives of our people. Now, if this was World War II, we were rationing food during World War II. People could not buy brand new cars. You couldn't get new tires unless it was essential for you to get new tires, because we had to invent synthetic rubber just to make tires for all the trucks and stuff we needed. So we have to understand that our culture shifted so that it would not continuously disrupt our lives every time something happened. So now we've been to war for almost since 2001, and people have been able to buy a brand new car whenever they wanted to. They've been able to buy a brand new refrigerator whenever they wanted to. They've been able to eat whatever they wanted. Nobody's asked you to buy a war bond. Nobody's asked you to grow a victory garden. We've not been collecting tin. We've not been doing any of that because of the things that our government did. But we elected people back then who made the decision that we needed to change how we was doing it. It just happened to be we were electing Democrats. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, New Deal, Harry S. Truman. But when it was over with, we didn't put Republicans in charge because they do something. They have a point. They can grow the hell out of an economy. It just, you know, it's grown unevenly. But it does provide the resources when some shit go around for us Democrats to go tap later to save the ass
of
the country.
Okay, but now we're in a situation, though. We're in a situation, though, and this has gone down a different path than campaigning kind of stuff. But I will say this. We have a lot of time on our hands. So
right.
With that being said, messaging and getting a message for your campaign that is timely is very important at the moment, because your stump speech that was okay in February is no longer applicable.
Right.
Because we are now seeing the fallout of some of the decisions that are being made by our president at the presidential level. That's the way I'll say it. So,
and even
like,
some of the decisions,
you know,
that are being made at the gubernatorial level, at some county level.
Yeah.
Because I'm gonna follow this dog out because hell, it's been put out there. You know, Democrats in DeKalb County, they not happy. They not happy at all.
Of course not.
They not happy at all.
But you know, there's everything
you
connected.
You got the city. You have the city who are making major moves, and now everybody's looking toward the county and being like, okay, we got a CEO. You can make some executive decisions. That's why we put you there. When are you going to make one? And so now that changes the whole political environment.
It will change the whole political environment, but I mean, if it depends on how you look at government, right? Because
right.
If government is from the bottom up for you, it makes sense to target the CEO. If it's from the top down, then it makes sense to go ahead and target someone like the governor, who for some odd reason
right.
feels as if he does not have the words, or he can't use his tongue to speak and shut down the entire state. Because, I mean, it's well documented that he feels like it's an overreach to do so, and he's leaving his, you know, these decisions in the hands of local officials or county level officials. Now, I mean, the one thing about leadership though is that leadership does start at the top, right? And it is a trickle down effect. And I would argue that some of our leaders might be getting set up by the governor, because the governor
right.
does not want to act. Right, and so,
but this comes down to what I was talking about.
A lot of pieces to the puzzle.
But this is why I was talking about the whole dynamic of culture, because see, one of the things that,
mm-hmm.
if you realize the political culture of Georgia, if you realize the history of Georgia, you know, one of the political myths that we have here in this state, and I've never been able to burn that out to be, whether it's true or false, is that Georgia has the second largest number of counties in the country next to Texas.
Right.
And everybody says, well, why does Georgia have 159 counties? Well, one of the reasons that has always been told to us, and we can't, you know, like I said, I can't prove it to be true nor false, was that each citizen needed to be able to get to its county seat within a day's travel. Now, this was back in the day
mm-hmm.
when we had horses and buggies. So that's why we have so many counties, is because everything was based on you could travel from the farthest extent to the county seat within a day. Just conduct business. Because the culture of Georgia has always been about local control. This is why cityhood is a thing in certain places, and why consolidating governments is a big thing, because local control is a part of the political culture. This is why in our legislature
right.
we have, you know, the ability to have local legislation. that is that can be voted on by a delegation, and everybody else just agrees with it, and it becomes law. So the governor is acting on, you know, the culture that has existed in Georgia since we were a crown colony.
You know what?
And
I'm not giving the governor a pass. I'm not giving him a pass,
but this is why understanding your political culture is very important. Because, see, the thing is that a lot of people who live in Georgia now, who are running for office in Georgia now, were not born in Georgia. Some of them weren't even raised in Georgia, and they don't understand. Now, I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying you need to understand it, because even to change something, you need to understand why it exists and how it exists, so you can change it in the right way. Because some things about that is good, are good and positive things, and some of those things need to be thrown out with the baby and the bathwater. So the thing is what our governor is doing is he's using our tradition as a crutch to be a coward.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you.
He's being a coward. Because, as I've told people many a time, leadership is about making hard decisions, sometimes that is very damn unpopular. And at this point in time, who is he trying to placate? I don't think anybody would really give a damn if he shut down the state. He's just scared because this isn't what we do as Georgia. You know, we have the same problem every time they say snow. Every time they say snow finna fall from the air, we know how that white powdery stuff from the air affects us because we're not used to it. People go to get a coin in their hand and flip it to whether or not we're going to respond or not respond. And we always get it fucking wrong. But it's always, to me, to overreact than to underreact, because underreaction usually causes there to be a loss of life, or even from an economic standpoint, a loss of money over long term. Because I know that I have people in my family who were caught in the snowpocalypse of 2014. They were people who, some of my family members were stuck on the highway for upwards of 10 hours. And that shit was traumatic to them. They see snow falling out there, their asses is not leaving the house.
Yep.
Whereas they used to be willing to go out there and try it, but now I'm not fooling with that because I had a bad experience. So we have that same thing now. People are going to say, okay, I can't trust my government to do the right thing, so I'm not even going to wait for you to put me on lockdown. I'm going to lock it down first. And that can have consequences the next time this happens. People need to be able to know that they can trust their leadership. The governor needs to follow the example of Newsom and Cuomo. And even his fellow Republican governor over in Texas, Governor Abbott. Governor Abbott has put a statewide order. He's not locked down the state, but he said all the restaurants will do takeout. I don't give a damn if it's Laredo. I don't give a damn if it's Houston. I don't care if it's damn Texarkana. Y'all gonna lock it down. You gonna do certain things, and we're gonna. And if y'all can't do that, then I'm reserving the right to take it a little farther. You know, I have a friend who works for the city of Houston. Starting tomorrow, they are going to take the temperature of each and every employee as they're coming through the door.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is essential personnel that's going to work. And each person will be given a bracelet of some form. I think the bracelet is to identify that you've been tested today. And when you came here, you was all right. We're going to test you tomorrow, and you'll get another bracelet, say you're all right today. And if we come in here and something has changed, we're sending your ass home. You're not even going to be allowed to come in here. Because they are looking at Houston locked down a long time ago. But the thing is that their governor, who is a Republican, realizes that Texas cannot afford for people to get sick on that level. And Texas is not even as bad as Georgia is right now. Because if you go back and look, if you go and look at the national map of states right now, Georgia is in that next color group. You know, they got these red, these reds and browns that are denoting how many, you know, cases you have, with the darkest colors being
right.
Washington, California, and New York right now. Well, Georgia's in that color, in that color group right behind them. And you look at places like Albany and Southwest Georgia, where the outbreak is really just exploding, because those governments down there figure, well, we're rural and, you know, ain't much going on. It's taking a bigger hit because, one, we don't even have the hospital capacity to deal with these people. Phoebe Memorial Hospital in Albany is being inundated right now.
Well, I mean, they couldn't, you know what, I just, it, all of this is going to come back, in my mind, it's all coming back to Election Day, because
right.
our rural
this
hospital
is why
systems are,
doing,
are crushed.
And this is why it is important. We as Democrats, you independent voters out there, by Bernie Bros, do not sit your ass at home. I personally don't give a damn if you don't vote. Now, if you just really decide you just can't vote for Biden, don't sit your ass at home.
Right.
Vote the down ballot. And I need you to make sure that you vote for Democrats. And I'm being overly partisan about this because we get it. We are not scared of the science. The science is not some juju with us. Even our Christians know enough in the Democratic Party to follow the science. Because I'm going to tell you something. Prayer works, but it only works if you have faith. And false faith is what we have a lot of. Because a lot of these people who consider themselves to be Christians, you wouldn't even have elected Donald Trump if you was really a follower
right.
of Jesus Christ. And I'm going to put you out there like that. And I cuss like a freaking sailor. Stuff that Donald Trump has done would have disqualified him from being a leader of mine just because of the fact that I consider myself to be a believer. But you want to live a pious life in which you don't cuss and you don't drink and this, that, and other, but you elect a leader who is disrespectful and does not do things in good, decent order. This is important for us as an electorate and as our candidates out there campaigning. This, you actually are in a good position that if you can go out there and utilize the technology, if you can be innovative and talk to the people where they are, because that's always been the most important part of field, talking to people where they are. Now, right now, they are behind their computer screen. They're behind, they're sitting looking at their television screen. They're on their phone. You can talk to them directly. You can drive people to your Facebook page. You can drive them to your Twitter feeds, and you can do just like the President of the United States does every day. He tweets every day talking to his base. Candidate, you ain't on the phone asking for no money. If you're not on the phone asking the money, do not be all in your staff's behind about some crazy shit. Pick up your phone if you got a Twitter account.
Yep, call people.
Now, staff, watch your candidate. Don't let, if you see them tweet something crazy, go correct and be like, you're not going to tweet that no more. Make sure your candidate's got good information so that when they're tweeting, they have shit sitting in front of them. There needs to be a deck in front of every candidate, some type of cheat sheet that says these are the numbers from the day. So if they're tweeting, they have good data. If they're Facebook posting, they got good data. When they go on Facebook Live, have some type of outline so they just not doing it from the hip. But they can talk to people all freaking day long. You got time. You can talk to folks all day long. You got there, you can write out scripts. You know, candidates, you know what you want to say, because half the time we put stuff in front of y'all anyway, y'all go and say, I can't say that. So sit down and write it out. Then let us see it and go through it. Y'all write it first, then let us see. Not be the other way around, and then you go through and pick through it. You write it, let us see it, so we can make sure it's all right, that your data's good. And then you go do what you got to go do. because I can't stand basic ass candidates. I can't stand you, can't stand you, can't stand you. And that's another thing why we're campaigning out here that I really want to touch on. Because there are candidates out there who you spreading urban legends.
Hmm.
I ain't gonna call no names. I ain't gonna call no names. Cause you know y'all, I just don't do that. Cause you might get it one day, and I don't want this holding over your head that I called you this and I used your name. But some of y'all some basic ass. You listen to the shit that the hotels are telling you, Street. Yes, I said hotels like it's a cuss word. And then you have the audacity to repost this stuff as if it was the gospel. And it was scientifically based facts. There's certain things we can joke about. And everybody knows a meme is a meme, and they usually are jokes. And this is why candidates need separate campaign pages from and separate personal pages. Do not share joke memes on your campaign page.
On your campaign page. Yep.
You want to do that personal. And your personal page should have been locked down to just your personal friends a long time ago so that you can be you and y'all can talk about the silliness and the foolishness. Or, hell, start a Facebook Messenger group, and y'all can do that silliness there because that's what most of my friends do. We got our own silliness going on that y'all can't see. But it is important that you, as a candidate, are putting out good information and that you're seen as knowledgeable. And I made a post about this the other day, knowing where to get your information from. This information is way too easy to access. You got the World Health Organization, which does a daily briefing, which if you want to see the situation report from each and every day, you can go to Down South and Dirty's Facebook page. There's a link to the situational report of the World Health Organization every day right there. You click it, it'll take you to the page, and it's usually the one that's on top. And you can go back and look at all of the situational reports. And I think we like on situational report, sit rep number 60 or 61 right now. So you can go all the way back to the first one with the World Health Organization. You can track and see how it's done and do research for yourself, how this thing has worked worldwide. The CDC has a very similar thing. The Department of Public Health here in Georgia has a similar thing. So you can get good information. And then you can go back and cross-reference information all from the global organization to the national organization to your home organization. We got people here in Georgia who are data gurus that have been putting this information in very easy to digest tables and charts for us that are put out there, and I share those. Most of you people that I'm talking about who are doing this crazy, these same people are your mutual friends and they showing up on your timeline. Share good information. Because if you can't share good information or don't know where to get good information, you don't need to govern. Because one thing about being in government is being able to access resources. And when we talk about accessing resources, we're not just being able to talk about access, you know, financial resources, but informational resources. Because just because you're elected doesn't mean that you're the smartest person in the room. Some of y'all think you are, but you're not.
Mm.
So you need to rely on information from experts. So if you're a butthead and you don't play well with others, so therefore the experts won't talk to you because you're just difficult to deal with, you might not need to be in office anymore because you're not doing us any good because you can't get your constituents good information to be able to make decisions for them that are going to benefit their lives. So even as candidates, you need to make sure that you're getting good information. You need to make sure that you're getting accurate information. You can then tweet out, put on Facebook posts to your constituents, the people that you are looking to vote for you. And if you got incumbents and challenges going out there, people are comparing that. What does that look like? You know, who is giving me the best data? People are looking at that because that's going to be the standard. Who's giving me the best data? who is able to communicate effectively with me with this during this time? That can make a difference. Another thing, since we're going to be talking more in depth about things, and I'm not trying to be funny, but I need some of you people out there to practice your diction. How you actually talk. If you know you have a deep accent, slow it down.
Right.
Slow it down. Make it where people can understand you. You know what words you have a difficulty pronouncing. Either practice that word till you get it down or don't use it at all. Go get your thesaurus. Find you a simpler word that has less syllables. I'm being serious.
I'm sorry, you need to read the word in the dictionary.
Because the thing is that people of that, when you're at somebody's door or somebody else is at the door for you or you're making a quick little stump speech, this, that, and the other, people may not catch certain things. But if you're going to be doing more talking and more detailed communication, you want to watch yourself. Make sure people are proofreading what you're writing. There's this wonderful little extension that I have on my phone and on my computer, Grammarly. That joke runs
Grammarly is awesome.
And it, most of y'all may have noticed. Shoot, some of Scott's stuff is a little bit better put together grammatically than usual because I ain't going to tell you no lie. My grammar sucks. You know, I use double negatives. I forget where to place my commas. I mean, that's just what I do. And most people think I'm a pretty fairly decent communicator. But when in written form, I suck. That's why I like to talk. Because my writing sucks. Now, you know, but with Grammarly, it's been a lot better. So, I mean, use the tools of technology to help you do what you need to do. We got like 5 minutes left in the show. And I appreciate the caller for coming in. I know folks are listening. But I just want to know that you got anything, Kadada?
Pushing on. Like, don't get stuck in the fact of what you can't do. Start looking at what you can do, because we are uncertain. Politically, we are uncertain, especially if we're looking at a May primary. We don't know for sure, but keep acting as if May 19th is your election day. So keep working. And, hey, guess what? If you need help on your campaign, you can call Scout and I. We'd love to help you.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. You know, me and Kadada are partners, not just here on Down South and Dirty, but we've formed a consultancy, North and South Strategy. And we're out there ready to help. You know, you can send us a Facebook message. You know, we can, you know, send us an email if you have our email. My email is scottsmith2014@gmail.com. Kadada, you can give yours. Hell, I'm going to be bold. My phone number is 706-350-8310. That's 706-350-8310. Give me a call. I mean, we're working
with... Yeah,
call
Scout. Don't call me.
Yeah, call me. Yeah, because, you know, I don't want none of y'all weirdos calling Kadada because, you know, there's some dudes of you that we will cut you about Kadada. Understand? We will cut you because you be trying to...
I am not,
you know,
looking for a date, people.
Look, because we already watching these jokers trying to slide in her DMs. She got a man. So we don't want him cutting you, and I am bound... As her best friend to help him cut you. So,
oh my goodness.
Yeah, don't do it.
Oh my goodness.
So don't do it.
Oh my goodness.
But
oh my goodness.
You know, Don't be trying to slide in my business part of the DM and trying to do what you do. Stay where you at. Unless you're trying to put some duckies in her hand to go out there and run some campaign, or you need a good life coach. You know, if you need
a life coach.
Yeah, you know, some of y'all need definitely. You need a whole life coach. You need a life team. Some of y'all need a life team with a coach. Wide receivers, quarterbacks, all that.
Oh my goodness.
But seriously, there's a lot of different things that we need to be innovative about, trying to make sure that we shore up our democracy during this uncertain time, and campaigning, and engaging with our citizens in ways that they can be reached in this time is very important. We appreciate our opportunity here on Down South and Dirty to continue to be able to bring you good information. I'm glad that the campaign has slowed down enough that I can have Kadada on the show with me today, because I've missed her. And I know y'all probably get tired of hearing my voice.
I feel loved.
But we appreciate our ability to be able to come to you during this time and be able to give you information. We're going to try not to coronavirus you to death over the next couple of weeks, because there's other things going on in the world, and we need to be aware of those. And that's always been Downside and Dirty's mission, is not to always just bring you the stuff that everybody else is bringing, but to try to make sure that we are hitting the wrong spot. So, y'all go out there, you be safe, have a great Sunday. Practice your social distancing. If you don't want to be on complete and total lockdown, practice your social distancing. But you can still go out and get some fresh air, do that. Don't drink too much. And please, let's not have no baby's name coronavirus in November and December. For real, because I don't see that out there. Yeah, y'all don't do that. Don't do the most. Don't do the most. And be safe out there. Practice safe sex, people, because I know y'all out there doing it. This is Down South and Dirty, and we're out.
I cannot.